Could you just comment while you're thinking about that on the issue of correlation between MSI testing? We had a case of a patient who had, quote, negative IHC. Doc was suspicious because of the family history. And a patient ended up having germline testing, which showed Lynch with MSH6.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that case? And what do we know about, you know, different assays?
Yeah, really interesting case. And it's funny, you know, we had that case in Florida and probably about 2 years ago in Brazil. I was giving a talk and somebody stood up and said, well, I had a patient that came back, you know, microsatellite stable, and then ended up having microsatellite unstable cancer when I retested. And so what you have to realize is these assays, it's 95%. So you do have a failure rate of some of these assays. And I think what's really interesting about that case in Florida, as well as the case in Brazil, is that it was the astuteness of the clinician to say, wait a minute, this doesn't really make sense. We've got this huge family history. The tumor's poorly differentiated. They saw lymphocytes. This really feels like a microsatellite unstable cancer. Could we be potentially missing the result on this test? And maybe it is time to retest. And of course, they saw the retesting. The patient was microsatellite unstable. So for some of those cases where you get back something where it just doesn't jive, it may be worth rechecking.
In a related question, would it be easier to just look at tumor mutation burden as a way to, because that's kind of at least one of the downstream effects of MSI deficiency, and also would take into account other potential mechanisms for hypermutation? Is that an easier route?
Easier, but it takes a little bit longer and it's more expensive. So it just depends on your approach to testing, right? So the most common test that people are going to do when they're looking at microsatellite status for patients with colon cancer is the immunohistochemistry. They're going to run it. They're going to get the assay results in a couple of days. If people are running next-generation sequencing frequently on their newly diagnosed patients, then certainly you could use tumor mutational burden there to take a look at thinking, oh, well, then this patient might have microsatellite instability. And probably because you used a different assay, you might see that microsatellite instability pop up on your next generation sequencing. But I don't know that I would say that means that you shouldn't do IHC and next gen sequence everybody.
So I just make a point. In a perfect world, you would do all four things on every patient. So there are four ways to assess MSI/DMMR. The first is to look for protein loss by IHC. The second is to look for a gene mutation in one of the four genes. The third is to look at the MSI status. And the fourth is to look at the TMB, tumor mutational burden. Your confidence in using a PD-1 inhibitor would go up if all four of those are abnormal. So if you have a protein loss of MSH6 and you find a mutation in MSH6 that confirms a protein loss and the person has an MSI high status, and their TMB is like 30 mutations per megabase.
How low would it have to be suspicious that it wasn't MSI? How low?
Well, most of these platforms either just detect it as being MSI high, intermediate, or low.
No, I mean tumor mutation burden.
Well, it's different for every cancer, but if the TMB is like less than 10 mutations per megabase, I would consider that a low likelihood of a PD-1 inhibitor working despite an MSI high.
You were mentioning some other finding that may be related to sensitivity to checkpoint inhibitor.
Yeah, polymerase epsilon. So that is a gene that can be associated when it's mutated with high mutational burden with other tumors. So people have been looking at the utilization of checkpoint inhibitors for patients who have polymerase epsilon mutations across different tumor types. It's pretty rare, though.